Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. This is Ryan Smith from the Beer Phase, TO of the Alamo GT, and maker of many weird armies.
And this is Scott Holcomb from Surge and Destroy over in California.
And I am Jeremy Duvall. Welcome. I'm really excited to have two great hobbyists on the episode today. We're going to be going in and talking all things display boards, which I know is a really fun topic to talk about. They're fun to do. We've all seen amazing ones. We've all seen some ones that were not so great. So we're going to try in this episode to approach display boards kind of from all angles. So we'll talk a little bit about high-end display boards, really accessible things you can do to make a cool display board. And I can't wait to pick Ryan and Scott's brains. Ryan, I know we haven't had you on the show for a little bit, and I know still every now and then get their beer phase content coming for you guys. What have you been up to lately?
I'm just coasting through life as best I can. Working projects, Mark and I record when we have time. We often will say, hey, let's record this week. And then it's 3 weeks later and we still haven't recorded. Life just, it gets in the way. And where we are right now, I'm not sure when this will release, but right now it's like mid-May. So school year is wrapping up. So kids have a ton of activities going on. It feels like we've got something every night. I haven't made a regular gaming night in, I think, since January. If I hadn't played at Lone Wolf, I would not have a game of Kings of War this year, I don't think. So all of that goes really well, you know, going into the Masters season.
Of course. Of course. Who needs practice?
Yeah, practice. We talking about practice? We talking about hobby. This is about hobby. So I'm working on Mitsudans right now, and I am trying to figure out what next year's army is going to be.
Cool. So even in that busy maybe where you can't, you don't get a chance to play as much, are you able to find time to do hobby at all still?
Yeah, I usually try and set aside an hour or two every day to do hobby. And it's even as simple as I'm going to put a coat of gray on a unit I'm putzing around on, or I'm going to play with my airbrush and jam it on something, or I'm going to try out one of those color shift paints that I picked up at the hobby store a year ago and never got to. You know, just experimenting. If I don't have a project to work on, I find busy work for myself.
That is just dedication, an hour or two every day.
My wife and I had a very easy compromise when we first got married where she's a light sleeper. And so if we go to bed at the same time, I keep her up. So when she goes to bed, I have an hour or two to myself to do whatever I want. And it turns out what I want to do is paint.
Yeah, I do find that hobby time is a great before bed activity. It's like, you know, screens and video games and stuff will keep you awake. But I feel like if you're just painting for a couple hours, you can just go to bed. It's pretty easy.
And there's something soothing about it, especially if you've got something soft to listen to while you're doing it, light music or something. I have fallen asleep painting before and woken up 30 minutes later going, oh, my neck hurts. And now the top of this model is yellow and I don't know why.
That's awesome.
I've done the fall asleep too. You're sitting in your comfortable chair, you're meditating, you're putting all the pants blue, and then next thing you know, you're being shaken awake. And you're like, what? I was just resting my eyes. What about you, Scott? What have you been working on?
All right. Well, I got kind of two exciting projects I'm working on. One is my super top secret Masters display base, which is very fitting considering our topic today. It is very elaborate, and I won't go too into the specifics of it because I'm hoping to you know, surprise people at Masters. It's the first Masters that I will be able to drive to reasonably. I'm not like Brenton driving from San Diego to Seattle or something like that, but Reno is only, you know, 7 hours away from me, so at least I can drive there. So you know, I don't have to design a display board to be put in a suitcase. I'm excited about that. So I'm working on that, and also making the Masters trophies and medals, and that's kind of a hobby project in and of itself. Actually, this weekend, working with my wife on the ribbons and sewing things, the ribbons together and stuff like that, trying to figure out how it will work out. So two kind of very unique projects.
Yeah, I know we're really excited here. We're getting really close to Masters, as Ryan knows, having helped to host the Masters and Alamo, running a GT is its own hobby. It feels like sometimes all the stuff
you absolutely is,
you know, because we're making trophies, we're doing this. We just launched today our 2025 Masters Discord server. So that's a new thing we're trying out for this year's Masters, is we have a dedicated Discord server that has all the information. So we're excited. We're excited about that. That just came out today. You know, as Scott said, we've been working on all our prize support, dealing with a lot of great vendors, really excited. We're going to have a hobby first aid table, the table that's being sponsored by Game Envy. So they sent us a bunch of wet palettes, a whole set of brushes, glue, files. I'll have a bunch of Reaper Master paints, some GW paints there. And then we're going to have a little like kiosk on that same table. Great ideas from the gang. We're going to have some of those single serving Advil packets, some heartburn medication, you know, all the stuff that you might need. We're going to have a little hobby slash concert first aid table. So that's going to be super fun.
One other thing kind of going on in our local gaming community is that recently, well, you know this, Jeremy, I probably have a game day at my house every other month or so, and then we'll do a game day somewhere else in some game store every other month. But just recently, we've kind of hooked up with this other group called SoCal Mordheim. And for those of you who don't know what Mordheim is, it's this just dead Games Workshop skirmish game. It's been dead for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, something like that. And but people are still playing it just because they love the vibe of it. There's just a pretty thriving community down here in Southern California, and they've kind of come to our game days, and they just have so much buildings and terrain, and that they have this whole hobby aspect of it that I just love as well. That's, we got guys that are just building these cathedrals out of foam, just nothing but foam, and it just blows my mind. Every single brick just cut out, and it's just beautiful and gorgeous, you know, in its own type of way, you know. So that's awesome. Kind of one I want to give a shout out to them too, because it's just it's inspiring to see just a whole table just filled with ruined buildings, you know.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I imagine will resonate with all of us, is what draws us to a display board. And I think if you love terrain, and if one of the things that first got you into the hobby was like looking at an old White Dwarf, of seeing not just the army painted, but the castles and forests and all that other stuff, you know, because doing a display board is really a great opportunity to scratch that itch.
So to merge those two thoughts, Tim Delmas to Alamo last 2 years ago brought a Mordheim board that was 16 ruined Mordheim buildings, some of which were 4 or 5 feet tall and full of old GW Mordheim models, where if you peeked inside a building, you might see a standoff between Einur the Twilight Blade and a Skaven Gutter Runner, or a vampire and a dwarf miner. It was a thing of beauty, and it was like a love letter to Mordheim written as a Kings of War army.
Tim is a great hobbyist. He had the chicken halfling army too. Was that his army?
That was his army as well.
Yeah. Oh man. He is just like, we've talked about this so much, Ryan, which is there's a difference between being a competition painter and wanting to make nice armies full of, you know, dripping of theme, right?
Yeah. There's a difference between painting an award-winning miniature and painting an army to a concept. And Tim is one of the best in the state at it.
Well, I've been working on my Northern Alliance. I've been making a bunch of progress. I'm on the home stretch for my Horde of Ice Elementals. I'm doing I hadn't really talked about this with Ryan on the show, but I'm doing a more elf heavy Northern Alliance theme. So it's kind of like ice elves. And idea is that it's going to be like an elf village ruins at first fall. So it's snow, but like lots of different textures of snow because of the deep frozen snow and like the fresh, more like icy snow. And then I'm doing like lots of fall colors and foliage and leaves, because the core of the army is like blue, silver, gold, a little bit of orange. So that orange pops really nicely. So I'm super excited about that project. And I'm using, it's going to be all Mantic. And I'm trying to think about some ideas on what, we haven't had a lot of people converting Mantic to be Mantic, right? So yeah. I'm using a tree herder as Harim, and I'm just going to make him like this fall, like half frozen tree with like blue and purple frost mushrooms growing on him. So essentially that's going to be my frost giant, is I'm going to use the Mantic tree herder, which Man, it's a really, some of these Mantic models, you don't realize how nice they are until you actually get them in front of you.
Yep.
And you start working on them.
Yeah, there have been a couple of models where I've looked at the box art and gone, eh. And then I start building it and I'm like, oh, there are details on this. Tundra Wolves are a great example of it, where the box art is like, yep, that's a set of wolves. And then you start painting them going, they have eight eyes.
No, you're exactly right. And another thing that came across as I'm speaking of, you know, staying within the sort of milieu of Northern Alliance, is I have a couple regiments of Icekin Hunters. So I'm putting together the plastic half-elf where you can make them as the berserkers or the bow guys. And they're like a really solid, dynamic, lots of motion. It's a really nice kit. And the same thing with like the Frostbirds. Instead of dwarves on mine, since I'm doing elves, I think I'm going to have elves on them. Because then if I ever want to, they're the same. The Frost Ravens are the same base size as Drakon Riders. Mm-hmm. So then maybe if ever I want to flex my ice elves to be like regular elves. But that's another great kit. Those big raven birds are awesome too.
Yes, they are.
So pretty impressed with the Northern Alliance miniatures for the most part. So I've been getting that together. I'm still hoping to debut that army at the Bay of Kings, which is in September, and it's a 1995 point tournament. So then that means that one unit, or that one unit in Hero that I'm still not done with at that point, these just won't be in the list because it's only 1995. So
I really like the idea of having it between seasons so that you can use the textures from both. That's really intriguing to me. And I feel like texture is a big part of you know, modeling and bringing the richness of it out.
Yeah, I think really when you look at nature, right, it's not, nature is so different and varied and has colors. Like I remember one time Ryan gave me a great idea of, oh, you should shadow white sometimes with purple, like look at snow and how, you know, so if you can kind of find a way to get just variance and interest into especially display boards or any like multi-basing or some of these elements, I think the more your eye is going to read it as a real thing, right? Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll get right into display boards. So we will be right back.
Hello, this is Duncan Rhodes from the Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. And I hope you're about to apply a second thin coat just there whilst you're listening to Countercharge.
This is Paige from Singapore with the YouTube Battle Report channel Newbie Dice. And you're listening to 战神反击.
And we are back. So my first question, Ryan, I'm going to start with you. Let's say I've never done a display board. And I'm just like, oh, you know, maybe kind of thinking about it. What would be your elevator pitch or why do a display board?
The easiest answer on why you should do a display board is you need a way to carry your army from one place to another and not have to make multiple trips. That's where display boards started from, was the need to, I need to move these 13 units and I don't want to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then it became, well, now I can arrange the units however I want and then make something cool out of that. And then it became, well, now I can start telling a story with this board that then conveys the theme of my army. And since then, it's just blossomed into this massive spectacle of, I am going to craft a narrative around this army, and I'm going to use the display board to tell the story of what this army is. It is a tool you can use to convey so many elements of your army, from using it to make people come across the room to look at it, to I want them to see this unit last, so I'm going to just arrange the units in this shape that the eye will follow, and then they see the highlight piece of the army.
I agree with Ryan that it started out as a way to get your models from table to table cleanly and efficiently. What I find kind of hilariously ironic is that the way that it has blossomed into its own art form, at least for me, and I know a few other people, is it is entirely impractical to take it from table to table anymore. And it's actually a hindrance. So you almost just want a table on the side of the room so that it could be displayed in its perfection, you know, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, at lunch or whatever. But yeah, I'd say for people that are just starting out, it's like, make something simple, make it on an 18 by 24 piece of wood and arrange it in the type of basing that, you know, you're doing your army with, and have it be simple. And I think it is something that really kind of grows with your hobby skills. We spend so much time painting our miniatures that it's amazing how much you can extra oomph you can get by doing the multi-basing, and that same idea applies to the display board. One might spend 10% of the time that they spent painting a unit on the multi-base, but that really brings it together. It pulls more than 10% of its weight. And I think the same goes from the multi-bases to just the idea of a display board. It's, you know, it, for a normal, like average display board, it's just a little bit more effort. It's maybe the equivalent of doing another unit or something, but it really adds a whole lot more. And then you can go to insane lengths, like I know Ryan goes and I go as well, and spend a ton of time on it. And it just makes the army sing.
Yeah. So just to piggyback on that, I know you said it's about 10% of the time. When I do an army, it's about 4.5 months for the miniatures. It's about 2 or 3 weeks for the bases. And then it's about 6 weeks for the display board.
Yeah. Dustin Howard and I joke about this is like, when you show your art to people, especially if you're really focusing on trying to get better and growing, it becomes like, oh, the arms race is on, right? Where it's like that person brought a display board. Where next time my display board is going to be so big, I'm going to need a display board for my display board. And people get the table or the cart with wheels so they can put their display board on it, and then they're rolling the display board. But it's funny how they have really grown, right, from that maybe sort of origin story of being a great tool to carry your army from table to table when you're at a tournament or whatever, into now it is really a platform for like where your hobby can extend.
Love the arms race analogy, because that's so true. You see something, you're like, oh, I've got to one up that. Even to yourself, you're like, I did this, you know, last time, I've got to one up myself. And, you know, you're competing with other people, you want to outdo them. But it's just, you know, everyone's trying to outdo each other. But it's like, in the end, it's just this battle of creativity. So I fully endorse it.
I think there's no better way to get better at anything than surround yourself with people who are much better at you than that thing. Whether it's, I want to learn how to play the game better, play really good players, or I want to learn how to paint better. You know, start building that community and fellowship with great artists and painters, and that's how you're going to get better, is surrounding yourself with all of that. So when you guys are thinking about your display boards, talk to me a little bit about, and we'll go with you first, Ryan, of where sort of those original ideas are themes. Like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is the army first? And then thinking about, well, what display board might go with this army? Or sometimes will you just start in your head for, man, a cool display board would be this. What army might fit in that sort of world?
So I've done both. As a TO who tries to turn over terrain pretty regularly, I do a lot of terrain Kickstarters. And I'll print a building and set it on a table and go, oh, that's 2 feet to a side. That's not going to work on a tabletop. But it would be really cool on a display board. So I just throw them in this little mental file. And so if I have an army that I don't have a concept for, I go through that and go, okay, I have this Allmantic Night Stalker army where I'm playing with light and I'm playing with paint techniques. Do I have anything I could use for a display board? And I had some very large buildings for my current army that I just effectively sawed into pieces digitally and then built a display board around that concept. For my Riftforged orcs, I knew before I started making orcs what the display board was going to look like. And then I built the units that would fit within the slots of the display board. So I've done it from both sides. Generally, I find once you're working on an army, you start getting a feel for, these are the units I want to show off. This is the vague shape I want it to be. And then you build the display board off of that. I have these digital elements. I have these hobby tools. I have these skills I can do. When I did the Ogres in the Mountain, it was a love letter to model railroads. It was techniques my grandfather had taught me to build model railroads using paper towels dipped in plaster and making this massive little mountain thing that was 2 feet to a side and then 2 feet tall and weighed 45 pounds. And God, I wish carts had been a thing back then, because that was very inconvenient to waddle from table to table. But I knew as I was building Ogres, I wanted them in the side of this mountain and I wanted it to look like a dwarf forge had been taken over. And I built the army around that idea. You don't have to start with a display board. You can say, I'm going to build elves. Oh, I see this thing as a cool little elf tower. Let me build around this. Or I want to play with seasons. So let me look at trees. There are a lot of ways to do it. and a lot of ways you can start.
What do you think, Scott? I know you love theme in your armies. Where do you sort of percolate, or where does those initial ideas start to simmer from when you're looking at a display board?
Yeah, I feel that, you know, anytime someone's going to start a new army, I feel like the best way, it's got to be inspiring. You've got to really love some sort of vibe about that army, and because that's what's going to get you through painting for, you know, 6 weeks or 3 months or 2 years or however long it takes you to paint your army. You have to love the vibe that it has. So I think it's got to start with something about, whether it's the army or you saw a movie and it made you think of that, you know, The Mummy, or for Empire Dust, or you saw Lord of the Rings and you wanted to do a dwarf army or an elf army or something like that. Or you just got some sort of crazy idea. And I feel like the display board and the way that you multi-base the models and the way you paint the models all has to come out of that vibe. Like, for example, I'll give you an example of an army that I have not done, but I want to do. Maybe it'll be my next army. Maybe it'll be two armies down the road. But I had this idea a few years ago of just a Venetian masquerade with vampires. Right. I think it was probably started because we were going to go to Venice a couple years ago, and we did, and it was beautiful. And we've started doing these Halloween parties. They're vampire masquerade parties, and they're amazing. But what the idea, the vibe that I had was, how about these Venetian vampires in boats, like going through like Venetian canals, you know, this like regatta of vampires through canals, you know, with the Ponte Vecchio, you know, in the background. So it, just like how crazy of an undead army is that, you know, just every unit is some sort of thing on a boat, you know, with skeletons, you know, just oaring their way through, or clawing up the sides of the boats or something and going through the canals, and just the extravagant Venetian costumes, stuff like that. So that's like just an off the wall concept, you know, and that's just something I want to do someday. And that goes through everything, from what type of units I would get to the display board to what I would model the bases as. But of course, that's an extreme example, you know, but it could be just as simple as I want dwarves that are in the forest or something, you know.
It's kind of like and maybe this resonates with you, Ryan, where it's like you start with the snowball at the top of the hill of, oh, I'm bored tonight. I think let me put on, you know, let me put on Lord of the Rings, or let me put on, you know, a movie about knights crusading. And the next thing you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to make a crusader army, but it's going to be like a crusading army already over, you know, in the Middle East. So they got to be fighting on desert. And it's like you can take a little kernel of an idea, right? And then slowly but surely that then manifests into an army and terrain and a display board.
And you got to have that, because that's what's going to drive this passion to go through the tons and tons and tons of work that it's going to take to make it reality.
Well, and it's another good launching off point as well. Everyone can go in their head, okay, this is an elf army, this is a dwarf army, oh, look, they're in a mine. It's when you start transposing those armies in places they shouldn't be. Jeremy, like your elves in the snow. No one does elves in the snow. Everyone does elves in the fall, or elves in the spring, or elves in the summer, all coming through the forest. We're at a point now where the hobby has been around. I mean, grand tournaments have been a thing since, what, 2004, 2003? We've seen this is the generic army in their home. Now people are starting to say, where else can I put them that makes them interesting by that? Let's do Empire of Dust on a beach. Let's do, you know, elves in the sea, or dwarves on land in a city versus underground in a mine. That we're starting to get some really, really cool ideas from transposing this is the generic massive evil company take on it, but now we're doing it somewhere else, and that makes it new.
Well, and I think that Kings of War just really made that more possible too. Just the idea of multi-basing just really just exploded the possibilities from at least, you know, I'm a Warhammer refugee, and it was, I would do like these unit fillers and stuff to do creative things, but you're just still limited by the fact that your unit is also wound counters, right? Mm-hmm. So just the fact that you have these multi-bases and the way that you can make the multi-bases interact with the display boards, it's like stuff that you are never capable of doing in at least Warhammer.
Absolutely. Multi-basing is what has made display boards as cool as they are in Kings of War. If you go to other tournaments, you don't see the displays the way we have in a skirmish game because you can't do it. You don't have the big blocks that you can then integrate. Well, this unit is half in a ruined building and half out of it because I have this big multi-base to base that building fragment on. You can't do that with a skirmish game. You've got some that are in and some that are out, and they are not a cohesive visual thing as well as you can in Kings of War, where it's integral to the way the unit is built.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the multi-bases themselves has caused people to learn skills that they didn't have or didn't think they would ever need. Like, a lot of miniature painters may be amazing, but have they ever worked with Sculpey or worked with Putty or worked with any of these, or never done a model train like you did, Ryan? All the stuff from that side of the hobby store that we usually don't go into that very much. But in trying to up your multi-base game, you essentially, I think, build the roots of the skills that you need to do a display board, because they're really all the same skills, right? It's just they're on different scales, I guess.
Yeah, a display board is just a really, really big multi-base with some blank spots for you to put units in.
Yeah.
Exactly. So when you guys are kind of working through that theme, and I know it can be harder with the more extravagant, or maybe I know in the past, Scott, you had to do custom bespoke shippage, but are you thinking about size of display board, whether or not, okay, can I drive with this, or if I'm going to have to fly with this? Or talk a little bit about when you're thinking about like scope of a display board, how much sort of where you're going to be taking to it matters in its creation.
Well, I think you need a lot of planning when you're going to create a display board. You need to think ahead. And your first question should be like, okay, what is the purpose of this display board? Is it to take around to every table? Is it supposed to be one of those convenience trays that you take with you for from table to table? If that's the case, it really should be, you know, as small as you can make it, you know, and it should be simple, and it shouldn't have, you know, tall buildings or something that can easily fall off, you know, or get in the way of something else. It needs to be practical to that extent. If it's something that you have a cart and you're able to wheel it around, it can be more extravagant. If you are thinking, I just want to plant it in the corner of the room and it's not my thing that I'm taking from table to table, it can be as big as you want. You have to think about travel. When in Masters 2020 in New York, I made that pirate display board. Everything that I designed was based around the idea of it had to fit into two suitcases that were the maximum size allowed by Southwest. And that was my constraint. So I designed everything to the size of the suitcase and what could fit in it, you know, or the box. I actually had to build my own box with the exact maximum sizes, you know, and well insulated, knowing that, you know, they'd be throwing it around. You just have to think about that. The display base that I'm making right now, the constraints I have are my truck bed and how tall is it, you know, with the tonneau cover closed. And okay, so there's parts of my display board that I have tall buildings, but I've have these joints that, you know, they come apart right at that height limitation. I have trees on my display board, but they're magnetized to the boards because they would stick up above the, you know, what could fit in my truck. So you gotta think ahead about those things, especially with size. And like Ryan was saying about his plaster display base, about weight, you want it to be light enough that it's not a stressful thing to deal with. You also have to think about durability, because these things can't be, you know, these ceramic jewelry boxes that if somebody sneezes on it, it breaks. It's going to get bumped around. People are going to knock into it, or it's going to going to have some sort of bumps along the ride to the tournament, and you have to make it durable. And in that respect.
Yeah. So when I'm designing a display board, the first question I'm asking is, am I flying with this display board? So my Riftforged Orc army, I knew I was going to take to Orktown in Boston. That's a long flight for me. So I built the board to fit the interior dimensions of my largest suitcase. And then I measured height and segmented it when I printed it so that it would break apart in 3-inch tiers that were then all nested and magnetized into each other so that when it was assembled, it was fine. But I could take those hills apart into little 3-inch layers and then they fit in recesses on the display board so that when I traveled, it all fit in that one suitcase with a little bit of padding around it. My Night Stalker army that I'm doing right now is on a giant board. The board's like 3.5 feet wide. That is clearly not practical to fly with, and I intend to take this army to Masters. So when I built it, the buildings and the elements that the models go on are their own wooden piece that I'm building a frame for that will fit in that suitcase. And then I just glue it down, put it in the suitcase. And again, I did all the buildings in 2-inch segments, so they all come apart into 2-inch layers. They're designed to nest within each other. And then I can travel with them and have 3 stories in one single 2.5-inch layer that sits on top wrapped in foam.
That is awesome. You need to post pictures of that kind of stuff, because I feel like that just kind of planning is so inspirational to me, you know?
Yeah, well, you guys mentioned a thing that I think totally makes sense, whereas like if you're getting ready to do a display board, it's sort of where on the slider am I going to go towards like the practical or the amazing, you know what I mean? Like kind of where do I want to fit on that scale is sort of a good idea to work that into your pre-planning. Will you guys ever do like a sketch or get down and maybe build like a mock-up or in your pre-planning? Is that ever a useful tool to try to do like practice runs?
Absolutely.
So yeah, you have to draw it, sketch it out. I mean, I'm a little bit different because like I'm actually an architect. So like sketching something out and making a plan seems completely natural to me. I don't know if it feels that way to other people. But I also, at least with this last, this master's display board I'm working on right now, I made a 3D model of it basically in Blender. And then I kind of modified it in SketchUp and just to make sure that all the units could fit where I think they could fit and, you know, had, you know, just getting the sizing right so far ahead of time. It's, without that kind of planning, it would be impossible.
Yeah, I do almost all of my display boards now in 3D. They're either 3D printed from STLs or I find something and then modify the textures to have flock and stuff on it. So I do my display boards in Blender and then I just figure out how to print them off. Nice. The Night Stalker army, I think, was 162 elements to print. And I had to catalog them all so that I know what went where. But once I got it all in place, I knew everything was going to fit and where it was going to go.
But that is extreme, though.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Like Ryan and I are not this normal.
In the olden days when I was doing simpler things, I would just do a rough rectangle. I would try and do it. I had dabbled in architecture in college, so I'd use an architectural scale to make things proportional to each other. And then I would just drop, okay, this is an infantry horde. Okay, this is a regiment. This would fit here. This would fit there. That means I can make a tree here that's like 3 inches wide. And that means I can do this. And oh, these units won't go side by side. So it gives you an idea where the layouts should be.
Yeah.
If any doubt.
Grid paper and just kind of draw it out in pencil so that you can erase things. And yeah, just lay it out.
Yeah. If in doubt, lay it out. Take a blank 2x2 or 2x4 piece of wood and lay your blank bases down, and that gives you an idea how big it is.
I think a great starter tool could be in this planning phase, maybe for someone who is new to display boards. Often when you think about the display board, you're thinking about like what is the board actually going on? Especially for a new person who maybe the concept of cutting a piece of wood or maybe that's just not in your wheelhouse or whatever. I found going to like a Michaels or a Hobby Lobby or something like that and either getting a chalkboard or a corkboard that has a frame built into it and just build and being like, okay, my display board is going to be this. I'm going to build on top of the chalk or the cork part, but it's giving me frames. It's giving me a length. I know that this is the world that I have to build in. So I automatically know how much space I have. Do you think though? Have you ever maybe earlier in your display board career ever thought of kind of going down that way? Or maybe is that a good way for new people?
I think that's an awesome, like, just quick way to get a cool frame and just a simple size. If you could find something like that. Also, if you can't find that or you need a specific size, just, you know, go to Home Depot or Lowe's, get a thin piece of plywood. I think they make it in like 2 foot by 2 foot yep. sections. If you don't have a table saw, you could ask them to cut it down to 18 inches by 24 inches for you. Head over to the trim section and buy some sort of piece of trim to go around the outside, do 45 degree cuts on it. I mean, it's beginner woodwork, I guess, but good training for the future.
My first display board was done with quarter round, half inch quarter round, and a little 2x2 craft board. I think it was $12 in lumber. This was years ago, but it was really easy to do. I got my dad to show me how to do a compound cut, a miter cut, and just glued it on. And that was perfect. It had a little lip so that units wouldn't slide off of it.
As you guys have progressed, have you found a material that maybe you can't really say size, because size is going to be dependent, but as far as the base of your display board, what do you guys like to use as the first foundation that you're building off of?
I still build them on those 2x2 16 inch Luon plywood from Home Depot.
I feel like a pink insulation foam is what I do, because I'm always trying to like make some sort of terrain thing and I'm wanting it to be light. So I'll use pink insulation foam.
And pink insulation foam, that's a nice material, right? As far as if you're wanting to, I've been trying to experiment with it and making like rounded edges, right? If you want to make a hill or something, and then using some sort of like texture paste on top. That is, the foam is sort of that good material, right, that can look good but still save you on the weight department.
It is amazing for adding depth to something or height to something.
Just volume.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's so easily carvable and it's cheap enough that you don't feel like you're wasting money just trying things out and being like, no, that doesn't work. Just start over, or hack it off or whatever. Yeah. And really you need to cover it because it is, you know, it's not durable in and of itself,
it damages bad.
You can't spray paint it, that kind of stuff. So you always are ending up coating it with something. So you can just be rougher with the way that you're carving it out, because you know that you're going to be going over it with something else later.
And usually people will cover it like the old school way, or where you essentially, it's like a plaster type material, whether it's paper shredded with water or whatever. Is there anything other type of material you guys like to use, or is good for sort of once you start to build your landforms up, how do I then start to create like my ground?
So, I mean, you could just use watered down glue and sand.
Yep.
I think that's how I started. Yeah, the plaster stuff, like, I mean, AK comes out with all these like texture type stuff that, with different textures that you could just put down, spackle, that kind of jazz. One thing that I love to use all the time for rocks, and I don't see a lot of other people doing it, is using unprocessed cork. Like when people say they're using cork in modeling in miniatures, a lot of people seem to be talking about like processed cork, like the kind of stuff that looks like it's coasters or, you know, come in squares. It's like, no, cork is a tree that has bark. And if you can buy that bark, they sell it in pet stores. People put them in terrariums and stuff like that. That stuff, it breaks apart and at scale looks like a really richly textured rock. And I use that stuff all the time.
I was going to recommend pine bark for the exact same reason. Okay. You can buy it as a mulch or a ground cover. And if you take a knife to it or even just like crumble it with your fingers, you get some really great organic shapes that have depth and texture. And no one's going to realize it's wood. And the best part is it's really light. So you're not adding 3 or 4 pounds of like coarse ballast or, you know, the model railroad tools. You're adding light wood.
And then would you guys like paint it like a gray, or because usually the cork is brown, right?
Yeah. I always paint it.
Okay. Yeah, always paint it. You hit it.
You're
with
getting it just for the
highlight it.
Okay, it's so you want the cork for the texture and the look of it. Okay. Right. And talk a little bit about that. I think it's, you brought it up earlier, Scott, and I think it's so important is this idea of texture and visual interest, right? Of the more different sizes and shapes, and you know, you don't just want things with flat. And there's something in organic things that is a variety, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I use this idea when I'm doing the multi bases as well as the display bases, is that when you're looking out at nature, you kind of like the first impression is you have these big forms that you see. You see the big, you know, hill with trees on it, the building over there, the valley, the river, and you just kind of process it as four masses, right? Then as you have a few more seconds, you see like the next level of detail that's a bit smaller. You see the windows on the building. You see the individual trees in the forest. You see the rocks in the river. Then as you kind of like hone in on one section, you can see the individual, you know, mullions on the windows or the trim around the windows or the individual leaves on a tree. It's like what you want your display board to have are big masses that, you know, that you can see like four or five or however, depends on the size of your display board, just masses that are, you could see from 10 feet away. And then like it just gets progressively more detailed. And then to the point where, like, at least for me, I like having little vignettes inside of my display board, like kind of like what Ryan was saying, other guy that like you peek through a window and you see, you know, a little story happening. I like to put bones and, you know, blood splatter on one part showing there was a fight over here, or here's a broken shield or a broken banner. Here's a frog sitting, you know, on a lily pad, you know, over on the river, something like that. So you just want these layers and layers of detail. So like, for example, take rocks. I'll use that cork that I was talking about to make these big boulders. And then I'll bring in smaller sized bits of cork to make, like, you know, bigger, like smaller rocks. And then you even smaller rocks, you know, the ballast, you know, like that you use for model trains, and then sand. It's like, because nature has all those levels of texture, you want your display base to also have just different levels of focus.
So a display board, this is probably a more advanced technique, but the key function of a display board as a hobbyist, you're in a room with 30 to 40 to 50 to 70 other armies, right? You need to give everyone there a reason to walk over and look at yours. And a display board, those large shapes that Scott's talking about, are how you get people to walk over and look at yours. But then you need to find a way to make them keep looking at it. And that's where the vignettes and the details start popping out. You reward them for exploring your space. I'm going to look at this. I'm going to look in this window. Oh, there's something there. Let me look in this one. Let me walk around to the back and look this way. I like to create a display board that engages with them. So as they explore it, they're rewarded by finding more and more detail the more and more they look.
Yeah, and to create a story.
Yeah, and I think that sort of variety you can find, and it's one of the reasons why I love display boards, because I really think you can engage with it as a hobby at any level. Like an organic variety or something interesting on a low-level display board is making sure your rocks are different sizes, right? Even if that means like getting the Ballas Woodland Scenics rocks, what I have done in the past where I have three bottles, and it's all different sizes, and then I just mix them into a bag and I shake it up, right? Mm-hmm. So now I've created my own sort of like random size rock. You know, if you're using tufts, use a couple of ones that look different. Or if you're using flowers, don't just have one color of flower. Really is, I think you can find ways to insert that organic diversity that you find in nature at all levels of the making of the display board, whether you're a novice or an expert.
Another great way to do that is with ink washes, where you're painting your rocks and rocks are gray. I assume you're painting your rocks gray. That's the easiest way to paint rocks. But if you do a mid gray and then you shade some in purple and some in green and some in brown and some in red, and then you do the next highlight over all of them, you now have five rocks that look different, even though you're using the same paint on them. And if you go out in your yard and pick up rocks, even the same, if I pull three pieces of limestone out of my yard, they're all going to be three different shades.
Today, we just have so many little terrain kits that are available to us, like Mantic makes amazing sets. AK has amazing terrain, green stuff world. There's just, I just love going to these websites and just seeing all sorts of crazy stuff that's available to us and being like, oh, I'd never even considered, you know, having, you know, pink, you know, flowers on my display board. But you know what? I think it'll really work. You know, it makes it pop.
Yeah, because I think coming from a color standpoint, the basing and thus the display board can really help you get across color-wise what you're trying to do, right? Which is maybe I want some of my contrasting color to be in my base, or maybe I need, right? You can really use the base itself and the display board to feed in to your overall hobby scheme, I guess I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And especially when you start using colors you don't see a lot in a gaming room. You know, you're going to see a lot of browns, you're going to see a lot of blacks, you're going to see a lot of blues. But if you put pink on your display board or an orange or a vivid purple, those aren't things you normally see. So your eye is going to be drawn to that, even if it is just a little splash of flowers or dead leaves on one side.
And that's one thing you can really, as Scott mentioned, you can get a lot of. And that's maybe if you're building a display board, go and you shop normally at a game store, right? Your traditional board game store, right? Mm-hmm. Look and see if there's a train store near you or a hobby store. You like train resources for war gamers, I think is so amazing because they've been doing this stuff for decades, making water effects and leaves and all that stuff that I found in trying to work on multi-basing and display boards. I've really been pulled into the train world and I never thought I would go there.
There's this one model train store that's not very far from my house. And I walked in there and, you know, like model trains are, you know, it's this beautiful hobby, unfortunately kind of a dying hobby. Cause I think that the generation that was really into trains is pretty much like boomers and the generation before them. So they are ecstatic when a middle-aged man like me comes in, anyone in their 40s or their 30s walks in and is like, oh, mind if I, you know, how do you do this? They would love to tell you how to do it, love to help you. And these guys, you know, it's kind of this quasi-related hobby, you know, but they have never heard of Warhammer, know nothing about miniature wargaming, but they have been making terrain for decades and decades and decades, and they are good at it.
Every now and then you'll find one who does historicals. And they'll have that overlap where, oh, I play Napoleonic Wars or I play this game system I've never heard of. But their eye for detail is amazing. And they often have great suggestions for techniques I would never have thought about doing.
Yeah, just that wealth of so much knowledge, untapped knowledge. So we've talked a little bit about what we start with, our foundation. We've talked a little bit about how do we create organic looking bases with either using foam or cork and lots of different ways that we cover up the foam. One material that I really like, and I think it's a great entry level material, it's called foam putty. It essentially feels like silly putty, but it dries hard. So it's a big tool, I guess, in the cosplay community because my sister does cosplay and she let me have it put me onto it. So I use it a lot for my multi-basing when I'm trying to create slopes and hills. I put all like the skeleton of the hill together and then I take out a little bit of the foam putty and I use it like silly putty and I create my thing and then it dries hard overnight. And then I just put my texture paint on top. Now, on a big scale, this wouldn't work. It's more expensive, right? You buy it in smaller packages. But for multi-basing, it's been a great tool.
Yeah, I think that one thing in doing display bases, doing multi-bases, it's kind of like just having a whole bunch of tools so that you can, you know, you're tackling a problem and you have the right tool for that job. You know, sometimes it's, you know, building something up with foam. Sometimes it's ways of carving things, even burning foam outside because it's toxic. But also like just having a 3D printer and being able to utilize that as a tool, you know, just there's so many things out there. It's like learning just all the little types of things you can do to attack a problem in a different way, because you're going to come up against a situation where you can't use this method because of X, Y, and Z. So you have to think of a workaround and it's just great.
Well, let's talk about that. You bring up a really great point. I call it the bling, right? Which is my resin, you know, resin dwarf ruined head or 3D printed evil looking tree, or it's all of this, the really like the, when we're getting our bedazzled pen out for our jeans in the 80s, you know, this is what we're doing with our display, you know, our display board. But both of you, let's start with you, Ryan. Riff a little bit about talk about the bling of display boards. Where do you find it? What do you look for? You know, take us into that realm.
So when I'm walking a tournament going, okay, who's getting my player's choice vote? I always look for what display boards are trying to draw me over. And the way you can do that is with size, make something that's just absolutely massive and can't be ignored. You can do it with height. So build something that's got a giant tower in the middle of it or on the side of it. You can do it with LEDs. Who's bothered to put lighting into theirs? Who's wired it with fairy lights or with even glow sticks? There are ways to do lights. And then who's added motion? Because some people put turntables on theirs so that your eye catches that movement and wants to go investigate further. Those are the ways you really can go above and beyond with it. I know infinite mirrors, where it's a double-sided mirror where one side is lit and it reflects itself, are a really cool effect you can put in a display board that gives it a sense of depth and belonging. And then those that are just playing with levels of elevation. Someone that's got a display board that's 8 inches, 10 inches taller on the back than it is the front, because they're telling that flow or using that flow to highlight, okay, the stuff at the front's what you want to look at, but also look at what's up here on this hill.
Coming up with something unique is kind of half of what you just said, Ryan, was like trying to come up with something that either very few other people have done or no one else has ever done. And I feel like, you don't have to be someone trying to get player's choice at Masters and doing something insane. But yes, just little things like LEDs or, having a little bit of motion, having a speaker with, you know, having background music, you know, mm-hmm. using fog. I know I tried to use fog for my pirate display back in 2020. It was a big hassle because I was trying to use dry ice. And at the time, they had just started making these fog machines with the kind of vape juice. And now it's something you can buy easily, you know? So adding fog is something you just buy something off of Amazon from.
I have one in my Night Stalker army. I've got a fog machine that sits under the cart.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for just the atmospheric effect, right?
Yeah. I mean, we always talk about it's cool. You want to be like, what about so-and-so's are for you? You guys have a couple of unique armies, I would say. Like Ryan, remember Ryan's underwater trident realms, right? Yeah, like that's a cool, our Scott's like his sisterhood army, right? It's fun to, as you develop an army that people, the army itself develops a shorthand. Our people mm-hmm. kind of know that is your, that's their shtick, right? You're trying to come up with like, what's your wow factor? Your theme going to be?
Yeah, I'd forgotten that Trident Realms, when using water effects, is another great way to draw attention, because that's shiny. It glitters. It's literally shiny. It's super reflective stuff.
Totally. And then there's so many great companies. If you don't have it yourself, you can buy terrain bits. Like a great way if you're searching for stuff for a display board, Shibor makes great terrain bits. Lots of companies do. But I'm really curious, because I know you guys are both sort of prolific in this space. Talk about how much does having a 3D printer add to doing display boards? Right, it's kind of like a funny question, because it's probably the whole ball game. But I say Rift, they're gonna kill me in the comments, so Rift.
The two people you're talking to are probably not representative of the average Kings of War player. To me, it is huge. And I would say I have both a resin 3D printer and a PLA 3D printer, and I use both for different reasons. So, I mean, I 3D print a lot of my models, so it's essential in that regard too. One thing that I love about it is that it expands the amount of models exponentially what's available to you, both for the miniatures themselves and for the buildings and the terrain and stuff. It's like you can find, you know, if you go to a hobby store, let's say you can find 20 types of buildings there, but online there's easily 20,000, you know, just the amount of variety that you have available to you. And then on top of that, if you're crazy like Ryan and I are, and you learn a program like Blender, you can start digitally altering them. It's like you don't need to hack apart buildings to do a conversion. You can do it digitally and print it that way. And you can make it a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller. Like I've made elf buildings and I'm like, this doesn't look elfy enough. I need to make it thinner and taller. You know, so you just mess with the X, Y, and Z scales. You know?
I've made dwarf buildings the opposite way. This needs to be shorter. Everything else is great. It's just too tall.
I'd say essential for me. I'm sure for Ryan too.
Absolutely. 3D printing. I am a huge fan of Blender. I took a 3D sculpted army to Masters in 2023 in Omaha that I had digitally sculpted every model in it, digitally sculpted the display board. The entire army was done on a pair of 3D printers. It gives me almost an infinite level of control on what my presentation is going to be. Seamless basing is something that has fascinated me since I got into 40K in like 1999. The idea that the base doesn't distract from the unit, like the black paint of the green painted base has always distracted me that there was an edge. And so I always try and get rid of it on my armies. Having Blender and having a 3D printer means I can print bases with a 1 millimeter thickness where when I drop it in, you see a very thin line. And you don't even notice it. You're not broken up about this is a base. This is now part of the overall presentation and it fits in there seamlessly.
I do think it's worthwhile saying that, I mean, I said it was essential before. It's essential to the way that I do it. But I do want to say that if you don't have a 3D printer, it's not the end of the world. There are so many things that you can still do with just old fashioned techniques. And really, you'll see that attention to detail for anybody that's doing it. But 3D printers are an amazing tool for those that can get them. Or chances are, if you're in a gaming group, someone in your gaming group has one and is probably trying to, convince their wife that it's worth it. So they'll be willing to print some things for you.
Yep, for a little
bit. How do you guys think, as far as maybe someone who's thinking about getting into 3D printing, or is 3D printing like terrain elements, like a building or a tree or something, is that easier to learn than learning how to print the miniatures themselves? Is it like a good entry level and to kind of get the kinks out of how to print? Or is that not a good comparison?
So it depends what you need. If you're a TO and you're running an event, you probably want an FDM printer because you're going to print a lot of buildings and a lot of walls and a lot of hills and a lot of bigger stuff. I feel the learning curve on an FDM printer is a lot smaller. You need to figure out how to make it stick to the print bed. You'll fail your first 3 or 4 prints figuring out how to level it, how to get the adhesion right, how to deal with elephant's foot and all those little starters. But then once you have it working, you drop it in your slicer, you slice it, you print. You drop it in your slicer, you slice it, you print. You peel it off, you put the next one on. It's so fast and so easy. I like my results on resin a lot better, but it is so finicky to get right.
I feel like a lot of the FDM printers, the newer ones that you get, they're so much better than they were, even like 7 years ago, I think, or five years ago. I remember it being so finicky and failing so much. And I got a new one just a few months ago and it was like almost plug and play, and it just worked. And the software does all the calibrating for you and does all the support stuff for you. I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so much easier than it was just 5 years ago. But
you're not convincing me to keep my 5-year-old Ender 3, Scott.
No, by the latest, greatest thing. I feel like 3D printers are kind of like where flat screen TVs were like 15 years ago, where mm-hmm. just every year they're getting better and cheaper and bigger yep. and everything. And I'm hoping that resin printers get there as well. Resin printers inherently are going to be more difficult because you're just dealing with a toxic, liquid, and you need to have, safety precautions, and there's a smell associated with it, and there's filters and all that jazz. So, and you got to clean it, mm-hmm. I feel like it's inherently always going to be more complicated, but yeah, it's like 10 times as detailed. So it's really nice.
Yeah, it gives you stuff that you would have to go to a gaming company to buy models to do. And it gives you a lot of control over those as well. There is one more tool that I think both Scott and I have and use occasionally that you haven't mentioned, and that is the laser engraver.
Oh, yes, please do. Go for it.
So I did my first two display boards without a 3D printer. I had a laser engraver, and it was clunky to get what I want. What I could do now with a 3D printer is nothing compared to a laser engraver. But what it's great for, I need a blank base. I can make a blank base and a laser engraver in 35 minutes, maybe, for an infantry horde, where it may take me 6 or 7 hours to print that on a 3D printer.
Yeah, there's lots of things you can do with a laser cutter. I have a Glowforge, and I'll make the bases. All my bases are made with that. Also, just nameplates. Get creative with that and making nameplates with them. And sometimes I'll do like the decorative trim that around the, I think on my latest Sisterhood display board, I had kind of, filigree border that went around it with, roses and stuff like that, did all that with the laser cutter. And also one thing that I got last year so that I, mostly for my vampire masquerade parties that I'm throwing, is I got a CNC, which is basically a router on a gantry. And there's just weird stuff that you could do with it. And I don't know if it's super applicable to display bases in a lot of ways, but it's another thing that you can do weird stuff with.
It'd be a great way to carve hills.
You could carve hills if you wanted to, although I don't think it's as easy as
foam into it.
Yeah, it does carve foam. It does. But the problem is if you're carving something as simple as a hill, it probably is just as easy to just carve it with a knife, But if you're wanting to carve like distinct patterns, or you have a very distinct shape you want to do, and I'll make like decorative elements, like again, that like goes around the edge or something, or if you need to cut like a bunch of foam blocks that are all the same size, you can do that. So fun for so many reasons.
Would you guys say, as two people who have grown very far in the hobby, and the display board hobby specifically, what I found in my paint journey is that each new project I try something new, right? Like a couple projects ago, it was like, I really want to work on blue, right? I want to understand the color blue. And then it's like, oh, this next one, I want to really work on a more warm color or a technique. Like on my Northern Alliance, I'm working on non-metal metallic, especially on my ice elementals. I want my ice elementals to look like they're reflective. And that's something I've never done before, right? So but you learn by doing. Has that been a part of your guys' display board journey? Maybe, oh, this next display board, I want to try this new thing. Or I learned on my last one, this material didn't work, so I'm going to try something else. But is that also part of the hobby board journey as much as it is the miniature painting side?
It is. It absolutely is. Every army, I try something different for the display board. Some of them work, some of them don't. And everything that works goes in my back pocket so I can use elements of it later. With my Trident Realms army, I did 2-inch pours of acrylic resin. I will never do that again, but I will do a 1/2-inch pour and build a mold for it. I had a third of the display board covered in sheet acrylic. I will never do that again because it snaps really easily, as it turns out. But there are things I can still do with that will carry across. Right. Every board gives you new things you learn.
I am not nearly as prolific as Ryan is. I think he makes 3 new armies for every army I do. Every time I'm trying to do something that I've never done before. One thing that I would emphasize, if you're wanting to do display boards, is give yourself much more time than you thought you needed, because they are time consuming. And I don't see that as a distinct negative, because essentially this is a hobby and it is meant to consume time. And I enjoy doing it. I want it to be time consuming, but you'll start out thinking this display base is going to take me 40 hours and it takes you 100 hours. That's just kind of the nature of it, because things don't work the way you thought. You have to pivot. Things just take longer than you thought. Sometimes you just aren't in the mood for doing that step. So you really have to spend a week trying to pump yourself up to it. And then as soon as you start it, you realize when I did the pirate army. Well, let me look, going way back, I had abyssal dwarves. I was trying lava effects, and that you know, it was kind of that bling that you guys were talking about earlier. It's just having bright, shiny lava on the bases. And at that point in time, really early, not that many people had done it. And then, and even just the concept of multi-basing itself was kind of rare at that point. Then with the pirate army, just using the water waves, that effect, and trying to come up with the lighthouse that had a light inside of it, and having the smoke effects and the speakers and everything. I feel like now every display board I has to have, you know, sound effects in it. So for this one, I bought like little mini speakers that can go in specific areas of my display board so that, you know, a church bell will be ringing from this clock tower over here or whatever. So you just have to come up with silly, crazy ideas and try to figure out how they work. And I just love trying to think of things and think, what's never been done? How can I do something that's never been done?
The other advantage I find to doing display boards so heavily is because it's the last 6 weeks of my project, I never have to paint models in the hotel room the night of a tournament. Because if I haven't finished the models, there's no way the display board's going to be done. So I finish my armies months ahead of time, which gives me time for playtesting. It gives me time to figure out how my deployments are going to go. And then it lets me focus on the display board. And if I don't finish painting the last layer of highlights on that building, no one's probably going to notice but me.
That forces you to plan ahead more.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about, because you see, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, Ryan, with the sort of idea of seamless. Now, I know some people in their display boards like to build into the board itself sort of where the units fit. I see that creates a nice seamless look, but I imagine it is a little bit more challenging, whereas other people, they build the display board that matches their army, right? So when their army sits on top of the display board, just as their multi-base, the two areas match each other. But maybe talk a little bit sort of about the upsides and downsides of building those inset seamless style display boards versus just being able to put on top.
So the downside is at the start of the year, I know what's going to be in my army. And if a unit doesn't work, well, that's too damn bad because they have a spot cut in that board and they will have to go there. So your options are either you build the display board with more slots than you know you're going to need. My Rift Forged army, I think, is 3,800 points when everything is on it because I didn't know what I was going to take. So I just put places for everything and then painted the army. And then I just brought everything around. Why are there chariots? Well, they're not in the army. They're just there to look cool. So I miss the flexibility of, oh, I want to try running three hordes. Oh, I want to try running eight regiments. I can't do that. I have to know 6 months ahead of time what's going to be in my army. And if it doesn't work, then I'm just going to have a bad year. And that's happened before.
I kind of have a similar experience. I made my first kind of sisterhood display board, and I had everything inset. And then very quickly, I wanted to change my army. So I actually had to like make kind of an adapter part piece that made the bases a little smaller. I was really limited to what kind of changes I can make that would still work. So I'm not sure that I'm going to go back to trying to make it inset like that. The display base that I'm making right now, my strategy is to just make areas where units can go and maybe even a little bit more than my current army. But then what I'm my particular multi-base style has a lot of ruins on it, has a lot of shrubbery and flowers and rocks all around it. So I'm making the display board have a lot of that so it blends in more, but also because there's kind of the shrubs and the flowers, if it's close to the base edge, it makes it harder to see that base edge. Not that you can't see it at all. There's got to be some suspension of belief here, right? But it makes it less in your face. So that's my compromise with it.
I think either way, whether you're going to make them inset or not, if you have, I would think, I'm curious what you guys think, that if you do have certain elements, like say a certain type of static grass or a certain flower or shrub or texture paint, I think you want to be using this at least the same materials, right? That you're using on your multi-base.
Absolutely.
Use those on the display board so that whether they're inset or standing on top, they flow. You want to create that flow, right?
Yep. Yeah. You base it the same way, for sure. And also, like, I mean, Ryan's done this spectacularly, is that you could have some units have a specific type of base, because they go on that part of the display board, and mm-hmm. another unit has a different type, you know? So you could have units that are going through a ruined building and also have units that are going through marshland just because it's two halves of the display board.
I did a teams tournament in December where I did that, where I had ogres up on a bridge and then herd on the river below coming underneath it. And the bases flow together, even though they're very, very starkly different because of that combination.
Well, and also, I mean, there's been several people that have made their units in such a way that the units just, like, you know, kind of butting up against each other create, you know, some structure or something. In that, I've seen a long time ago, there's a troll army that the every unit of trolls made a bridge.
Robbie King's army. I was going to mention that if you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I think Mark Cox's army with the pyramids, you know. So you could also use the multi bases themselves as part of the display board when it like it comes together like Voltron, you know.
Yeah, Ryan, who made that really nice Mark Cox tower display board?
So that was a team tournament army for Blue City Brawl that he and I did, and I have enough display boards at home that I tend to leave our team display boards at his house.
Nice.
Very cool board. Key there, I would say, that I think crosses through all play levels, whether your unit is in set or it's going to sit on top. Always find ways to tie it to your display board, whether that's using the same shrubbery, the same texture paint, the same design, you know, the same elements. Like you definitely don't want to have an evil graveyard-based undead army on a bright green field, right? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You want the display board to thematically be linked to the army itself.
You don't want your snow base is going on your desert display board.
Yeah, it just doesn't, you know, it takes the viewer out of the fantasy, right?
Right. And I mean, maybe going into painting more than modeling, but you should have something that makes the whole thing come together. There should be like one note that goes through everything, I believe, you know, whether that's a color, whether that is, you know, a style of something.
A palette, an underlying ink wash.
Yeah, exactly. Something that ties it all together visually.
Cool. One thing I've noticed, and I meant to bring, it slipped my mind when we were talking about transportation, but I want to bring it up now. One area that I've started to sort of look into for a display board, because especially us on the California, if we want to go to any major event outside us, whether it's a Texas event or Adepticon or anywhere where you would want to go to show off a display board, you need to sort of figure out how to travel with it. So I was thinking about what people travel with things that are big that they don't want to break. And that kind of brought me to band equipment. And there are some band equipment companies that make insulated foam, kind of like it's more like a chest, I guess you would say, like the olden days travel, but they'll build one to your specifications. So I was like, well, let me get a chest built to the specifications of the maximum checked bag Southwest size, kind of like what, you know, using Scott as an inspiration. And then you can design the interior foam to be however you want as well. So there are lots of creative ways to ship our display boards, but I just wanted to bring up that one.
Because I felt like I looked into that and found it cost prohibitive.
It is really expensive to do that.
It's expensive. So that, again, is another sort of, but if you make it a certain size and you just say, well, all my display boards, you're only going to have to buy one of those for your life, right?
Yeah.
And then you just build it in a certain way that sort of, it's a catch-all. So all your boards, at least the board itself, can fit in there, and then you can wrap and foam all your buildings or however you want to do it. Right. But I imagine that it's an upfront cost, but I'm wondering, you know, this was a thinking is, you know, could this be it's expensive, but it's going to last me for my whole hobby lifetime, you know?
One thing that I just kind of thought of this last year was, you know what other group of people want to send big stuff around the country all the time when they're traveling is skiers and golfers. And they have these oversized bags for sports equipment. And even companies like Southwest, you know, they say like, oh, okay, you can only have a bag that's, you know, this big by this big by this big, unless it is, you know, sports equipment, then it's just goes in oversize and whatever. So if you can buy, like, you know, like one of my friends is a kite surfer and he'll travel with, you know, his kite board and kite, and it just comes in this huge bag. It's an enormous bag. It's like, okay, that's not insulated in the way that you're talking about, but it's so big that you can put something big inside of it and then just wrap it in, you know, bubble wrap over and over and over and over again. You know, that's one potential workaround.
You reminded me of something else I had done for an army 10 years ago, Jeremy. I built an army to go to Waupaca, Wisconsin in 2015, I want to say. And I built this display board that was way too big to fit in a suitcase because it expanded out to almost 2x2. But what I did is I designed it in tiers and framed it and then put drawer sliders inside it so that the board could open or close 9 inches wider than it was packed down. Oh, nice. Using those sliders to expand the width of it.
It's like an origami display board.
Yeah, it just unfolded, and then it had laser engraved stuff that would clip on it to kind of hold it in place and brace it when it was expanded.
But lots of different ways to think about. It's like the Da Vinci Code. Is building, like, you know, this display board that you hit a button and all the gears start moving and it just,
yep.
You know, transfers out into, and it makes, like, you know, lead into gold, you know, and all the cool alchemy.
I looked at options for my Night Stalker army on how to hinge it so that it would just fold in on itself. Yeah. And then ship that way.
Any way you can, like, segment it. Also, one way that I found, if you need to fly with it, if it needs to get into a suitcase, is because every inch counts when you're talking about flying with stuff, is like, look at your suitcase and then, like, measure the inside depth. But then remember, like, this, the corners of this suitcase are, like, rounded, right? So try creating a display base that has chamfered corners, and, you know, kind of think of it like the paper that's in Battlestar Galactica, where every corner is chopped off, right? If you make your display base with chopped off corners, you can go right to the edge and it still fits inside the suitcase.
And don't forget to allow for the space the wheels take up. I failed that several times where I was like, oh, it's this big by this big. Yes, except for down here at the bottom where there are these wheels that stick in 3 inches.
Let's talk about the future, right? Let's put on our prognosticator caps and think about, I'm curious to hear from the both of you, where do you think, what's, like, the next logical step of the Cold War, of arms race, of display boards? And maybe take that from, like, a humoristic standpoint, but also, is there anything you haven't tried in a display board yet that you're really excited to in a future project?
I mean, I think generically speaking, you're going to see fog a lot more because it's getting easier to implement. You're going to see electronics, like our little lights or moving things or screens, because they're so cheap now, just all the, and they're going to get cheaper in the future, you know, God willing, but, just to be able to implement LEDs, like, it's just everything is getting more user friendly. And now we've got, you know, if you don't know how to do the electrical component, you can ask ChatGPT, you know, how can I connect a watch battery to this LED? You can go look it up, you know, it's so easy.
Wireless charging is also going to help, starting to see elements where people have lighting where all they have to do is put it on a display board that's got that wireless power underneath it, and right. Then it'll pass through. Also, as step down gear motors are getting smaller and smaller, I think 10 years down the line, we may see articulated models that move on the board.
Yeah. All sorts of cool little things like that. I mean, I think in the grand scheme of ideas, though, there's always going to be a level of technology, and there's people that are going to be right on the edge of technology. And then, you know, maybe a year or two later, everybody's implemented it into their, you know, crazy display boards. But it's always just going to be a really creative idea, right? Someone's going to come up with something that just, it didn't even occur to anybody else to do. And I think that's what makes it really seeing, you know, it's not so much the, oh, I found this cool thing on a website, as much as you just had this idea,
And so much of it, it's not like they're introducing something like a new, it's every time I've seen that, I'm always like, oh crap, that was so easy. Why didn't I think of that? You know, where they've taken something simple, or it's not always something super complex. They just done something in a way that just had never occurred to you. But once you see it, it's like, oh my gosh. It's like you see an idea that is as if you've always had it yourself, but you never had, but it feels that at home to you, I guess.
And I think just that really inspiring thing, that's what we are drawn towards, right? You know, like I think having a cool gimmick is cool and everybody laughs about it and, you know, you're excited to see it. But when you have that, like just that inspirational idea, you know, that's the thing. That's the thing.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a break. And on the other side, we'll share all final thoughts and we'll wrap up the show. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Ash Barker from GMG, and you are listening to Countercharge.
I'm Andy2D6, the Orange Legend, and you're listening to Countercharge. Get ready to charge those counters.
And we are back. So, you know, I'm trying to, as through the episode, take you guys, you're such expert in your field. And I think when you can kind of, you know, talk about those high-end stuff, I know that gets your juices going. But sort of as we wrap up the show, if you guys had your younger self, if you could get in the DeLorean, I always say, and hit it to 88 and go back to like young little Scott or young little Ryan building your very first display board, like what would you tell yourself as like a tip or a couple of tips? What would you say someone to just getting into display boards?
I think when I was younger and starting out, I was too concerned with getting it right on the first time. You know, I was too much of a perfectionist too early on. And I wish I could just go back and tell little Scott, like, hey, you're just going to suck for a little while. Yeah, everything you're going to do is not going to look great. And you just got to get over that hump. And you know how you get over that hump? By doing iteration after iteration after iteration. You just got to do more reps of this stuff, not make the perfect thing on your first attempt. Does that make sense? Like, just get out there and do it. It's like if you're going to use foam for the first time, buy some foam and just chop it up and have at it and get messy, and maybe it'll look good and maybe it won't. Just do it and experiment with it and be fine if it looks mediocre, because your next one's going to look better and your next one's going to look better. And you just need to not be scared about getting it right early on.
Well, don't be afraid to fail was my first one, but you already covered that pretty well.
Yeah.
So I'll go to my second one, which is don't be afraid to ask people how they did stuff. My first 5 years, I saw some of the most amazing armies I have ever seen still to this date from people that are so far gone from the hobby. And I wish I had stopped to go, hey, how did you do this? Walk me through how you did it. Give me an idea how I can do it myself. Because some of the best ideas I have ever had were things I stole from someone else who tried it. And then I could make it a little bit better, learning what they did wrong, because I'm never going to do a resin pour army again. But if you ask me how I did it, I'm going to give you advices so you don't screw up the way I screwed up. And yours is going to be better than mine. You know, exactly. So much of us, especially when you start talking to people that are hobbyists first and foremost, we are so happy to share how we did what we did.
Oh, yeah. We are not guarded about it.
No, we want you to be as good as we are, because that's what makes us want to do better. I don't want to make mediocre armies. I want to know there are people out there that are getting as good as I am. And if I don't learn something new or try something new, they're going to be better than me and I'm going to get left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think part of this game is like it, we want it to be beautiful. We want it to be really cool looking, because that is one of the ways that we get new people into the hobby. We are not just bringing, you know, trying to get, you know, Player's Choice Awards or paint awards by getting people to come over. We want people from the other side of the store that aren't even playing Kings of War to come over and look, or people that just are visiting their friend at the tournament and are like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. I want to get into this. You know, we're trying to evangelize for the hobby too.
Yeah. Your army is your way to ambassador to people that don't have a clue what the game is. And you're going to get more people in the game by having something cool where people are like, I want to do that. I want to make something like that. Than you are a cunningly, tactically fought 11-9 draw where you snuck out the 2 points you needed to win the tournament. That's not going to bring people into the hobby. It's not going to bring new players in. But having an army that people go, what the hell is that? I want to go look at that. That's where we get new players from.
And just like the hobby itself, I think, can be such an enriching part of your life. Just, I know Scott spoke to it. I know Ryan spoke to it. I know we've spoken to it in the past, but there's a reason why in so many ancient religions, when you think about meditation, there's often some form of art involved, whether it's, you know, copying texts in an old manuscript monastery or different types of other visual arts. There's something so therapeutic about the conscious focusing of being unfocused, right? I'm so focused on this one tiny detail, I drift off and all the and become unfocused on all the stuff that doesn't matter. So if you haven't really, and I think I truly believe in today's world, hobby is for everyone. Contrast paints, Slapchop contrast paints, there are so many awesome tools now available to people, I think, to make tabletop ready armies like never before. So I don't think there should be anything holding anyone back nowadays.
And the thing with a display board, you don't have to be a good painter to make a good display board. You can be a mediocre painter and bring an amazing display board and win player's choice very easily.
Oh yeah. So Ryan is an amazing painter and amazing modeler. I am a mediocre painter and a good modeler. And that's absolutely true. I win player's choice awards, you know, but I could never win the painting award, you know?
It's okay. I can't win games.
Yeah. I just love that in our hobby, there's so many different ways we can try to get better, whether it's being a better sportsman, a better general, a better hobbyist. There's so many different on that classic three-legged stool. You know, there's a lot of shafts that I don't mind rubbing on that stool. You know what I mean? And I just don't want, I feel like there's so many great ways to enter the world of display boards. That's not that hard. Just give it, just try. Like it took me 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb to figure out how to make it. No, so it's like the learning is in the doing.
I was going to say, like, in terms of like just gamifying, you know, the tournament scene and people that are trying to do well at tournaments, it's like a lot of tournaments, you've got, you know, your battle score, you got your sportsmanship score, and you got a paint score. And you know what? Like the paint score is like something that you've already done before you showed up, you know, like, so all the stress that's around the intensity that a tournament weekend is, it's like, well, whatever your paint score was, it's like, that's something you could just do in the head hours and you don't have to worry about it that weekend. And that's what I like about it is you're like, okay, well, I know I'm going to do well in this third of the points or whatever. And I don't have to do anything about it this weekend, you know?
I was going to say one of the neat things about display boarding is if you spend 3 hours extra on a unit, you're adding maybe one, maybe two highlights, depending on how big the unit is. If you spend an extra 3 hours on a display board, that time commitment pays off so much better.
So true.
Because you can do a lot in 3 hours when you're just dry brushing a building or ink washing something or playing with a static grass applicator to make your grass stand up. That 3 hours pays off a lot more than that last highlight will normally do in terms of what bang you get for your buck.
I know. I think that's so true. It's like the return to your rate of return or interest rate on that savings account is in maybe I painted a model up to a really high standard. Okay. If I'm going to add a little bit more shadow around underneath their left eye saw, you know what I mean? To the, maybe the connoisseur, that's going to matter. But if you spend just a little bit of time in multi-basing, really solid multi-basing in a nice display board, what you're going to get returned back from that, I think you're exactly right, is your rate of return on that is super high.
ROI is huge. And also just when you're taking things in context, if you took beautiful models and you put them on a, you know, ugly multi-base on an ugly display board, those beautiful models seem less beautiful, right? Like the context that you're looking at something matters. And even if you have someone that is just an ardent, like, no, it's about paint, it's not about, you know, modeling or multi-bases or display boards, it's like, even someone that is like ardent about that subconsciously can't separate it. right? They're going to take it into consideration.
Yeah. Well, I always wonder when you see amazingly painted models, like amazingly painted, and they're on a flat base, multi-base. And maybe it has like a rock here or there. But to me, it's like, if you're going to take that much time to, it's like you've worked out for a year and you've lost 100 pounds and you're looking great, but you haven't gone and bought new clothes yet. It's like, come on, man, show off what you got. Well, awesome, fellas. Really awesome discussion. I feel like this is one of those talks we could go on for hours and hours and hours. But I guess my final thoughts on display boards would be just try. There's tons of great ways to get started. Start small. Don't feel like you have to solve the code in the very first one that you do. You know, so I just, you're going to learn by doing. But I think they're really, I think after you do one, you'll find out how rewarding they are. So
talk to people, like Ryan said, like at tournaments in your gaming group, just ask people how they did stuff, how they would do stuff. Because there is so many things out there, so many things. I'm sure between Ryan and I, we both haven't, you know, seen 25% of the things that are available to us, you know?
Yeah, find those like-minded people, right? I would say what's pushed Scott, what's pushed myself, what's pushed Britain is, you know, are all our great hobbyists in our local area, or even the friendship, the circles of friends you make. The more connected you are with people who you respect, the more you're going to grow. So don't be afraid to like reach out to people. And I think people who are farther along in the hobby than you were at your level at some point in their life, right? So maybe not now, but they were at some point. So I bet you they're going to be so, I know, you know, most of the really great hobbyists are more than going to, they're going to take time and talk about it with you.
Oh yeah. We love talking about it.
Absolutely. We spend hours a day on this. It's no fun if no one sees it.
So is both of your guys' next big event is going to be Masters coming up. So Ryan, do you have anything else on you? Are you going to Bug Eater this year?
I'm not doing Bug Eater. I have to look up when Capital City Clash in Austin is. I can't remember if it's before or after Masters. I think it's after. So Masters is my next one. I don't think I'm going to get any games in between now and then. So I'm taking a brand new army to Masters that I've never played. So my team will be very sad to hear that.
I love it. I love, we call that the Britain special, which is, I'm going to paint this new army and not play a single test game. And
I took it to Lone Wolf.
Yeah. And if you are curious about Masters, we still have spots in Best of the Rest, though we're getting a lot of interest in Best of the Rest, which we're really excited about. So if you want to come out and take a look at what magic, evil, dark sorcery Ryan and Scott bring with their awesome display boards, definitely talk to your region chair. We'll get you all the info around how to sign up for Best of the Rest. We're looking like we're going to have a fantastic time at the Atlantis Casino Hotel coming up here. And oh man, it's just around the corner now.
It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah. Lots. Wait. Yeah. It's going to be a ton of fun. Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on, Ryan and Scott. Really pleasure having you guys on. Let us know in the comments if you guys are excited to hear a little bit more hobby related. It's a nice evergreen episode, right? So no matter what's happening in the game, we know this episode will be applicable to you in your hobby and Kings of War journey. So let us know if there's any sort of hobby topics, subcategories you want us to do a deep dive into. We would be excited to do that. So
always happy.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks, fellas. And with that, remember to always keep counter charging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.